Welcome to the Earth First Update, bringing you all the environmental news you can use for over 20 years. Hi, I'm Uncle Dennis here at the studios of Free Radio Santa Cruz, 101.3 FM and www.freakradio.org. On Thursday, July 20th, I want to ask you to please have a pencil and paper handy so you can take down names, addresses, email, web pages, and phone numbers so you can take action for the environment. Let's start off with announcements. There's an upcoming work day at the Fort Ord Dunes State Park in Monterey County, California, on Tuesday, August 8th from 9 a.m. to noon. Enjoy beautiful ocean views while removing invasive ice plant to improve the habitat for native plants and animals. Kids ages 12 and up are welcome with a legal guardian. Please visit calparks.org/parkchampions to register and see a complete calendar of our upcoming projects. We hope to see you at a work day soon. That webpage again is calparks.org/parkchampions. And a rare gray wolf pup has been born in California. In this story by Miranda Leitzinger of KQED Radio, as found on the Earth First Newswire. A rare gray wolf couple new to California have mated, producing at least three pups this year, officials say, and establishing the second pack of endangered wolves in the state. State biologists made the discovery after capturing the female gray wolf in Lassen County in late June and fitting a tracking collar on her. They'd initially spotted her and her mate during the summer and fall of 2016, when remote trail cameras captured images of the pair traveling in the northeast part of the state, the California Department of Fish and Wildlife said. There was no evidence the couple had produced pups at that time, but biologists doing a routine check on the female in the field on July 1st found very small tracks of what appeared to be wolf pups. Jordan Traverso, a CDFW spokesperson, said on Thursday. They then found that a nearby U.S. Forest Service trail camera had captured images of the pups playing close up. As it turns out, they had been there right in front of the camera trail. It's pretty fortuitous, and some of those pictures are absolutely just so cute of those pups, Traverso said. Some of them are looking right at the camera. The pack is the second one detected in California since the extinction or extirpation of gray wolves statewide in the 1920s. The first confirmed breeding pair in California produced five pups in eastern Siskiyou County in 2015. They're called the Shasta Pack, and the second is the Lassen Pack. For a really long time, they've been extirpated from California, but there's reintroductions that have happened in other states. They had come back to Washington and Oregon, and they dispersed, Traverso said. We knew it was only a matter of time. Gray wolves are categorized as endangered by the state, and at the federal level, they can't be hunted or killed under the state's protection. We were really excited that there is another established pack in California, Traverso said. We know it's met with a lot of mixed emotions based on the fact that there's a lot of different uses of land up in the northern part of the state, including a lot of cattle ranchers. But it's also a great ecological story that wolves are reestablishing after almost 100 years. The tracking collar was put on the Lassen Pack 75-pound female wolf in June 30th after 12 days of trapping attempts. State biologists planned the capture operation after the U.S. Forest Service found evidence of a recent wolf presence in Lassen National Forest. The anesthesia and collaring process went smoothly and the wolf was in excellent condition, CDFW senior wildlife veterinarian Dr. Deanna Clifford said in a statement. Furthermore, our physical examination indicated that she had given birth to pups this spring. The female wolf was lactating and state biologists believe it's her first litter. It's unclear how old the pups are. She's still nursing them. It's really hard to assess, Traverso said. While the female's origins remain unknown, genetic samples obtained from scat indicate the male wolf originated from Oregon's Rogue Pack. Traverso said he is the son of famous wolf OR7, the Rogue Pack's breeding male, who generated international interest when he became the first wild wolf in nearly a century to venture into Northern California. Photos taken in 2014, also by remote camera, confirmed that OR7 had at least three pups, Today, his son's pups are the equivalent of his grandpups. Biologists are hoping to learn a lot more about the Lassen pack via the collar on the female, the first gray wolf collared in California. The collar will collect data about her activity patterns, survival, reproduction, and prey preferences. It may also help to minimize wolf-livestock conflicts by providing information about the pack's location. It's going to help us learn and glean information that can help us with conservation management planning as far as how we can help protect livestock and also help the species grow in the state, Traverso said. So far, biologists know the Lassen pack regularly crosses public and private land. While most of the pack's known activity to date has been in western Lassen County, some tracks have also been confirmed in Plumas County, CDFW said. And in Zambia, Africa, a baboon has caused a power cut in Livingston, in this story from the British Broadcasting Company, as found on the Earth First Newswire. A baboon in Zambia has tampered with the cables at a power station in the south of the country, leaving 50,000 people without electricity. It caused the blackout on Sunday morning by climbing into the power station and pulling at the lines. The baboon survived the massive electric shock that would have killed a human being, a power company spokesperson said. A person would also have been prosecuted, Henry Capata added. The baboon was rescued by a wildlife organization and is now recovering but has serious wounds, he told the BBC. The power station is in the Zambian tourist city of Livingston, where it is common for wild animals to be roaming around as it is near a national park, the BBC's Kennedy Gondwa says. Electricity has now been restored to the affected customers in Livingston and the nearby Western Province. In a similar incident last year, a monkey caused a nationwide power outage in Kenya. And an albatross killer in Hawaii gets 45 days behind bars. In this story by HNN staff, Hawaii's Now Online, as found in the Earth First Newswire. A former Punahou school student was sentenced to Thursday to 45 days behind bars for slaughtering protected birds at Kaena Point in 2015. Christian Gutierrez was also sentenced to 1 year probation in order to do 200 hours of community service and was remanded to custody after the sentencing hearing. The people have every right to be angry and disgusted at my behavior, Gutierrez said. I am ashamed of myself. Prosecutors and wildlife conservationists had been pushing for 1 year in jail for Gutierrez, calling the crime savage. Authorities accused Gutierrez and two other young people in the killings of at least 15 Laysan albatrosses at Kaena Point Natural Reserve. But on Thursday, State Department of Land and Natural Resources Chairwoman Suzanne Kay said the sentence sent a strong message to the community. The fact that this man will serve jail time and community service recognizes the severity of these killings and the terrible impact it will have for years to come on the albatross breeding colony at Kaena Point, Case added. Jail time combined with the fine sends a very strong message to the community that there is no tolerance for abuse, destruction, or killing of Hawaii's unique and precious wildlife, whether it's an albatross, monk seals, turtles, or anything else. In March, Gutierrez pleaded no contest to animal cruelty, theft, and other charges. His defense attorney had asked the judge to defer acceptance of the plea, which would allow Gutierrez to avoid a conviction if he stays out of trouble for a specified amount of time. 2 years ago, Gutierrez and a group of friends from Punahou drove to Kaena Point to go camping. While they were there, at least 15 Laysan albatrosses were bludgeoned to death with a bat and a machete and shot at with a pellet gun, according to prosecutors. The youth then cut off the birds' legs, tied the dead birds together, and threw them in the ocean. Nests and eggs were left smashed. Defense attorney Miles Briner, who represented Gutierrez, said because the college student was 18 at the time he was charged, he's had to bear the brunt of the public backlash calling for punishment of the privileged teens. Two other cases are being handled in confidential juvenile court proceedings, he said. Gutierrez recently completed his sophomore year studying film at New York University, and the Associated Press contributed to this report. Copyright 2017, Hawaii News Now. anti-mining protester has been killed, and Maya Kachi demand justice in this story by Sandra Cuff on the Intercontinental Cry, as found in the Earth First Newswire. The clouds of tear gas began to dissipate, and the crisp sounds of gunshots punctuated the chaos halted. Someone was lying in the middle of the road. Riot police had wasted little time before firing tear gas towards the blockade that the local association of small-scale fishers had set up May 27th on the road leading to the Fenix nickel mine. The group blames the mining operation for polluting the lake on which they rely. Everyone scattered as the police special forces advanced. Most people retreated to a three-way intersection along the edge of El Estor, or further into the town in eastern Guatemala. Others regrouped on the other side of the blockade site towards the mine. Police removed the rocks, branches, and barbed wire lay across the road and continued firing tear gas now and then in several directions. But then the riot police began firing bullets. It wasn't long before someone was lying in the middle of the road. When the gunshots subsided, those of us who were closest began running towards the figure in the road. Someone else had already been helped out of the way with what appeared to be a bullet wound in the lower back. We only made it a few meters before police opened fire again. We didn't have time to see if they were shooting at us or sending warning shots into the air. Everyone bolted to the side of the road and hit the deck or took shelter behind the walls of buildings on the lower side of the intersection. Police were in the process of retreating right past the same intersection, taking the upper paved boulevard. When the gunshots again subsided, people once again began heading towards the man lying motionless in the middle of the road. Some of us faced the retreating police, holding our hands in the air while others yelled at them, "Don't shoot." Carlos Maazcoque was dead, lying on his back with lifeless eyes staring up at the sky. He was 27 years old. On the left side of his chest, the young Maya Kachi fisherman's shirt was soaked with blood. His younger brother was already kneeling at his side, his cries of anguish ringing out as people began to gather around the body. The following day, on May 28th, hundreds of Maya Kachi accompanied the funeral procession to the home of Maazcoque, shared with his 22-year-old wife and their 8-year-old son in El Estor in the local cemetery. That same day, the Guatemalan Ministry of the Interior issued a statement providing an official update on the situation and a key clarification: no one had died. What the company does is send police to kill people, George Yall said in an interview after the burial of his son-in-law, whose death the government denied. If we just leave things like this, any police officer can kill someone else. Since the killing of Maazcoque, leaders of the Guild of Small-Scale Fishers that organized the protest action have been facing intimidation and criminalization. In spite of the backlash, they took to the streets of El Estor once again on July 7th, leading a march to reiterate their demands concerning mining activities and lake pollution, and to demand justice for the killing of Maazcoque. The struggle would continue. This isn't just going to be forgotten, the GPA president Cristobal Pops stated. Maazcoque is far from the first killing connected to the mine located along the northwestern tip of Lake Izabal, 6 kilometers east of El Estor. The history of the Fenix nickel mine is a decades-long story of conflicts, disappearances, killings, and impunity. Mining interests first made headway in the area in the 1950s and 60s during the military governments that followed the U.S.-backed 1954 overthrow of the Guatemalan president, Jacobo Arbenz, who enacted sweeping agrarian reform and granted political rights and freedoms. The year 1960 also marked the beginning of a 36-year armed conflict between left-wing guerrilla forces and the U.S.-backed Guatemalan military and paramilitary forces. A UN-backed truth commission later concluded that the Guatemalan state was responsible for more than 90% of the violence, including an estimated 200,000 civilian deaths, and that it carried out acts of genocide against the Maya people in 4 regions of the country. At the time, the Guatemalan state had a stake in the Exmibol Nickel Mining Company, a subsidiary of Canadian International Nickel Company, or INCO. Two members of a high-profile ad hoc commission formed in Guatemala City to investigate the issue of mining rights in the area were killed in 1970 and 1971 under the administration of General Carlos Arana Osorio, and another commission member was forced into exile. Following the killings, Exmibol and Inco were given the green light by Arana Osorio. And tens of thousands of mink have been liberated from a Minnesota fur farm, as found in Bite Back and on the Earth First Newswire. Between 30 and 40,000 mink were freed from their cages at Lang Farms, 23588 Country Road 34 in Eden Valley, Minnesota, during the night of July 16th and 17th. Fencing surrounding the farm was dismantled and every single cage was opened. The farm is located next to wetlands and restored prairie, dust off WMA, Rice Lake WPA. Mink are common in Minnesota and can be found in waterways and wetlands across the state. The county sheriff told news media he was convinced that militant animal rights advocates were responsible and estimated damages from the raid at more than $750,000. And also from Bite Back, as found on the Bite Back site, directaction.info, we hear that during the night of July 6th and 7th, the Animal Liberation Front raided a hunting center in Bovisio Mosquiago, operated by the local section of the Italian Hunting Federation. Tables, chairs, and doors were broken, banners torn, and 70 quail were released from crates. The message, "Released to die, or raised to die, liberated to live," was left behind. And in the United Kingdom, Dove Valley mink hounds sent home by Hunt Sabs. In this story from Bristol Hunt Saboteurs, as found on the Earth First Newswire. Today we had a mega summer away day with Severn Vale Hunt Saboteurs and Beds and Bucks Sabs trekking up to South Derbyshire to back up locals who had intel that the Dove Valley mink hounds would be hunting in the Sudbury area along the River Dove. Before we entered the field, the hunt were being covertly monitored, filming illegal hunting with hounds in cry and hunt staff encouraging the pack to hunt on. Foot Sabs went in on the opposite side of the river, and quicker than you can say we've caught you illegally hunting, the hunt was thrown into complete disarray. Hunters were legging it in all directions, and the hound van with hounds hastily boxed up was speeding off down the farm track to get out of there. Sadly, we didn't have an official Guinness World Records timer present, but we're pretty sure this is the quickest a hunt has ever packed up and bolted upon seeing hunt saboteurs. Folks kept tabs on the movements of the hound van and supporters, and were pretty confident that they didn't venture out again that day. Mink hunting is a secretive summer pastime for those who would usually be out hunting fox and hare. Most of the packs that hunt mink today previously hunted otter, and in some cases still do, until a massive population decline and public outcry resulted in that practice becoming illegal in the late 1970s. They often use the argument that they are somehow supporting conservation efforts by controlling the population of an invasive species, but in reality their actions cause great harm to the fragile habitats of river-dwelling creatures such as otter and water vole. Simply put, yet more lives from the blood sports lobby to try and justify their actions. So please help us continue our vital work for the price of a cup of coffee at ko-fi.com/A37126JE. And the 10th blockade of logging equipment in Poland's ancient Białowieża Forest, in this story from Hombok Forest Defenders. And you can get more information at save-bialowieza.net. That's spelled SAVE-BIALOWIEZA.net. Early in the morning of July 20th, over 20 activists from Poland and the Czech Republic converged on a logging harvester and proceeded to lock on all around the machine with pipe lock-ons and banners. The Forestry Department guards removed all support and media from the site, attempting to take away their phones to prevent their actions from being filmed or photographed. The operation of the harvester was then instructed to keep the motor running. This continued for several hours, exposing the attached activist to the risk of intentional injury, with the operator of the machine warning the activist that the machine might move uncontrollably as it runs out of fuel. Yet, while being separated from the media and support group, and despite the noise, heat, dripping oil, and the danger, the locked-on forest defenders remained there for several hours and continued to call for the immediate stopping of all logging and for biodiversity experts to inspect the logging location. The forest guards made no attempt to remove the blockaders till finally the contractor operating the harvester agreed to stop work for the day and remove the equipment from the forest. Bialowieza Forest is the last remnant of primordial forest that once stretched across the European plain. With its ancient trees draped with multitudes of mosses, lichens, and fungi, it is a hotspot of biodiversity, supporting the largest wild herd of European bison, populations of wolves, lynx, and 180 bird species, including three-toed woodpeckers and Eurasian pygmy owls. The survival of this ecosystem is at stake as large portions of binational park on the Bielorussian side have been selectively logged over the years for its oldest and largest trees, also known as high grading. Now this extensively is happening on the Polish side of the forest with over 40,000 cubic meters of lumber harvested in 2017. Bark beetle outbreak is being used as justification for salvage logging, during which the bark containing the eggs of the beetle is left on the site. Unaffected species such as oaks are cut as well, while the British Environmental Minister John Susisco, who is behind this wave of clear-cutting, has set up a number of lumber shell companies involving some of his closest relatives. Numerous international calls for an immediate stop of logging, including the UNESCO Congress in Krakow on July 3rd, adopting a resolution for immediately halting all logging and wood extraction. This meeting and decision took place as direct actions and blockades were occurring in the forest. The governmental response was to continue logging and advocate the removal of Bialowieza Forest from the International Registry of UNESCO World Heritage Sites. As of July 18th, the European Commission joined in condemning the logging and taking the British government to the European Tribunal, to which Minister Susisco responded by increasing the amount of law enforcement sent to the forest. Since May, on the front lines of resistance to this timber gram has been the Camp for Defense of Bialowieza Forest, bringing together a coalition of activists, journalists, artists, and natural scientists, engaging in a continuous series of blockades and actions. While the state and private media has engaged in a constant campaign of attempting to vilify the activists, resulting in harassment of forest defenders by more conservative members of the local populace, while young people with backpacks are regularly stopped and searched in the area, and blockaders experience waves of repression and violence. This dynamic has only underlined the importance of international support and solidarity with the Bialowieza struggle. And Brazilian indigenous group has occupied an Amazon dam and halts construction to demand rights in this story from International Rivers and Amazon Watch as found in Intercontinental Cry and the Earth First Newswire. At Sunday on July 16th, 200 representatives of the indigenous Munduruku Nation occupied the main work camp, the São Manuel hydroelectric dam on the Teles Piedras River in the Brazilian Amazon, paralyzing the project. Led by Munduruku women warriors, the occupiers presented a series of demands to dam developers and Brazilian government authorities, including the right to consultation, land titling, and respect for their cultural and spiritual sites. They also demanded that developers repair the grave environmental destruction inflicted by dams on the Teles Piedras. In an open letter, the Munduruku state, our sacred places such as the Sete Caídas waterfall and burial grounds were violated and destroyed. Our ancestors are crying. The Teles Piedras and Tapajos rivers are dying. Our rights guaranteed by the federal constitution, which came to exist after much indigenous blood was spilled, are being violated. The letter emphasizes that construction of the San Manuel and Teles Piedras hydroelectric dams both located in close proximity to indigenous territories occupied by the Munduruku, Kayabi, and Apiaka tribes, constitute a gross violation of the right of indigenous peoples to free, prior, and informed consent, guaranteed by International Labor Organization's Convention 169, to which Brazil is a signatory. In an effort to support the FPIC implementation, in 2014, the Munduruku published a protocol in which they laid out guidelines for an appropriate process of prior consultation and consent for proposed projects that would affect their livelihoods and rights. Though they formally presented it to the Brazilian government in 2015, they have yet to receive a reply. Together with the destruction of the Sete Caídas waterfalls, the site considered to be the center of cosmology for the region's three indigenous peoples. Dams on the Talas Pedras River also led to the removal of funerary urns and archaeological artifacts on Munduruku burial grounds. Long a major concern of Munduruku leadership, the return of these items is among the principal demands of the occupation. And unfortunately, that's all the time we have for the Earth First Update this week. The Earth First Update is produced every Thursday evening at 9 o'clock, right here on Free Radio Santa Cruz, 101.3 FM and www.freakradio.org. You can listen to a rebroadcast tomorrow, Friday, at 3 p.m. You can also listen to WMNB 107.1 FM in North Adams, Massachusetts, Fridays at 5:30 p.m. KRFP 90.3 FM in Moscow, Idaho, Wednesdays at 3 p.m. KOWA 106.5 in Olympia, Washington, Saturdays at 7 a.m. WLSL 92.7 in Dade City, Florida, Sundays at noon. And KHCF 89.9 in Morgan Hill, Gilroy, California. KGIG 104.9 in Modesto, California. KPHD 93.3 in Modesto, California, and Berkeley Liberation Radio at 104.1 in Berkeley, California. All rebroadcast the Earth First Update. Please check their schedules for the day and time. You can also tune in to Grateful Dread Public Radio at gdprnashville.org. I repeat, gdprnashville.org, Sundays at 2 a.m., or you could go to radioforall.net, that's radio, the number, forall.net, where you can listen online or download this or previous editions of the Earth First Update. And please ask your local nonprofit community radio station to air the Earth First Update every week. It is free to download and broadcast. The Earth First Update is a production of Earth First Radio and produced at the studios of Free Radio Santa Cruz. I want to thank you for listening. I'm Uncle Dennis. Please do tune in next week for another edition of the Earth First Update.